Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Growing Leaders Podcast. We're so excited to have you. My name is Andrew McPeak, and I am joined, as always, by the illustrious Tim Elmore. We're really excited. We have a great show where we're going to be interviewing John Acuff. John is a well-known author and speaker, and we want to talk especially today about his latest book, Do Over. We're really excited to get started, so take us away, Tim.
John, I am so glad you're with us today. You have become one of my favorite people, and on top of just being a really cool guy, you make me laugh a lot. I mean, that's kind of been your reputation, wouldn't you agree? To make people
laugh?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, first of all, thanks for that. Thanks for those kind words.
Yeah.
It's been fun to cross paths with you over the last few years. We've done a few events together-ish,
yes.
Where
yes.
Like I'm getting there and you're leaving, or vice versa.
Yeah. That's right.
But yeah, it's been fun to get to know you online, especially.
Well, John, we could talk about a number of books you have written, but the one I really was wanting to zero in on here, I thought would be relevant for our listeners and particularly their end users. So many people that listen to us are in the world of education or athletics, or they're a mom or a dad, and they have keen interest in the next generation. They have a student or a son or a daughter or an athlete that's young, and they're embarking on that transition between backpack and briefcase, if you know what I mean. They're moving from
sure.
The classroom to the workroom. And this book that you've done, Do Over, is so appropriate for that. So would you start by just kind of giving the context, what drove you to do it? And you really had an epiphany, it seems like. So talk about that and what made you write the book.
Well, I went through a job transition. After 15 years in corporate America, decided to work for myself. And there were a lot of people that had a lot of questions about that and said, oh, well, how will it work? What's going to happen next? Transitions are always scary. And though there was certainly trepidation with any big decision, my wife and I felt very confident. And we felt confident because we had spent a lot of time building what I call a career savings account.
Mm.
You see, most people spend 18 years getting ready for college, and then they graduate, and the next thing they get ready for is death and retirement.
Yeah.
And there's this 40-year gap where our culture tells you your job doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason, Tim, we eat at TGI Fridays, not TGI Mondays.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
a reason Gallup says 90% of people are disengaged from work. But with a career savings account, you continue to invest in your career, and you get to spend that any way you want. And so the four investments in that are simple. It's relationships plus skills plus character times hustle. That's what equals a career savings account.
Okay, John, hold it.
I started to realize.
I want you to say that again, and then you can complete your sentence, okay? Those four components. Say them again.
Yeah, so there's relationships plus skills plus character times hustle. That's the formula. Those are the four investments you make. And what's fun is that none of your listeners right now are writing down, oh my gosh, he said relationships matter.
Yeah.
Mind blown. I'm so glad Tim had him on the show. No, we all know those elements, but see, most of us have never applied them to our career in this way. And if one takes a hit, Tim, the whole thing falls apart. And let's take, for example, say you have great relationships, great skills, great hustle, but your character takes a hit, you become Tiger Woods. And it falls apart.
Yep.
It's crazy that golf commentators right now go, it's so weird Tiger's not good at golf. And I want to say, he hasn't won a major since 2008.
Yep.
That's 7 years in a row.
Yep.
Like, is it possible that when a bomb went off in his character, it impacted his golf skills?
Absolutely.
Like, is that? Yeah. And so the concept of the book is about how do you, as you transition, as you go from backpack to briefcase, how do you make sure that you're investing in those four areas, because they're going to pay you dividends for the rest of your career? And my big passion is you're going to do a job for 40 to 60 hours a week for 40 to 60 years of your life.
Mm.
It should matter. It
yeah.
should have meaning. And you shouldn't listen to culture that says just live for the weekend or, you know, trade 50 weeks of misery for 2 weeks of vacation. That's terrible math, Tim.
Yeah.
That is the worst math.
Yeah.
So that's what the book's about.
I totally agree. In fact, when I think about those four components you mentioned, relationship, skills, character, you're absolutely right when you say any one, if it's missing, you diminish or sabotage your life. You mentioned character, but obviously everybody would agree skills are necessary. And relationships, holy moly, nothing more common than somebody that's got their hard skills down, 4.0 in school for Georgia Tech, but their EQ's low and they just can't seem to hold down the job because it costs, they have to work with people. So,
well, and working is easy until humans get involved, but unfortunately they're everywhere.
Unfortunately.
You have to know how to work with people.
Yeah. as Seinfeld said, people, they're the worst. So
exactly.
Well, okay, so I love the title, Do-Over. I don't know if you want to comment at all how you chose that, because I'm sure you could have called it a number of different things. It was a very practical book for me. Talk about Do-Over. There's so many people that they're getting game plans, but no one talks about the fact that maybe I didn't do it so right and I need to do it again. Would you please just, I don't know if you want to get into your story or just maybe encourage somebody that's not done the first attempt very well.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, there's a lot of shame about thinking you could have done it better.
Yeah.
Fear says a number of things. One of its favorite things is by now.
Yeah.
I work with a lot of 45-year-olds that say, by now, this is where I should be in my career. And I always say, according to who? You know, who says it's too late for you to try something? Or college students. I'll talk with college grads that are 23 and they'll say, I feel like I've already peaked. And I'll say, you have 50 years of work left. Yeah. You haven't peaked. And so my goal with the title Do-Over was to redeem the idea that a change is just a do-over.
Yeah.
Like every part of life, you either change or it dies. Like that, you either grow or it dies.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your company, if you, you know, you decided to, you know, buy into something and try some new industry, that's a do-over moment. Losing a job is a do-over moment. Going through a reorg. If you're going to work at a company, you're going to experience four very common situations. And so I really wanted to take the sting out of it. And I also wanted to say, there are positive do-overs. You know, getting a new opportunity, a role you're not completely ready for, that's a do-over. You know, being, I talked to a business leader yesterday, and his company is now at 150 people, 25 million in revenue. And he said, I've got to figure out new cultural things, because when we had 10 people, it was one way.
Yeah.
And now we're getting stretched in different directions. And so I would never say to him, boy, that 25 million you guys are earning is such a failure.
Yeah.
But I would say that's a huge do-over. And if you don't admit it and plan for it and build the right skills to handle that, you're not going to be ready.
No, you're right. It reminds me of that statement you and I both have heard. The greatest enemy of tomorrow's success is today's success. So, yeah, you've just got to always reinvent. And sometimes the do-overs are very, very, because of positives, but we have to still be willing to do it over. That's good.
Well, one of the stories that really stuck with me, I read a New York Times article that asked the question, why didn't Polaroid create Instagram? Why didn't Kodak create Instagram? And it's because they got stuck.
Yeah.
And organizations and leaders, young leaders, old leaders, when they start something new, there's risk and there's innovation.
Yeah.
But when it goes well, they move from innovation mode to protection mode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they start to say things like, that's not how we do things here.
Yeah.
And so whether you're in college, you're a recent grad, whether you're a stay-at-home mom that wants to try the workforce again, there's specific things to do if you want to have a successful do-over.
Yeah.
And for me, it was, again, I transitioned. I had a great job. I had a dream job working with Dave Ramsey, huge opportunity, but I knew I was supposed to try it on my own. So it was a big do-over, and it's been a lot of fun these last 2 years. I've learned a tremendous amount about work, and it's been fun to be able to talk to both sides of the coin, the entrepreneur that's starting their own thing, but also the member of the big company.
Mm.
Because sometimes in our culture, we glamorize entrepreneurs. And we say, if you're not doing it on your own, you're not dreaming big. And I think that's garbage.
Yeah.
I think that you can do amazing work inside of big companies. And there are big companies that do amazing work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, that's really my story. Not necessarily the big company, but when I graduated from college, so many of my peers were all starting their own deal. They had to have their own gig, their own organization, their own ministry, whatever. And I remember thinking, I don't think that's right. First of all, I didn't think they were really ready. But I said, in contrast, I'm going to go work on a team with somebody. And I had the undeserved privilege of starting to work with John Maxwell. And it was a marvelous thing. And even though my style is different and my traits are different and so forth, I gleaned so much of a couple of decades working with him. And I wouldn't trade anything for that. But it was under someone else, cutting my teeth, polishing my skills, and I have no regrets. So.
Oh yeah, and for me, Dave Ramsey was a crash course education.
Yeah.
It was a PhD, and I think that's part of what I'd say to young leaders: the patience.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll meet people and I'll go, I want to start a nonprofit or a social justice ministry, and I'll go, what does that mean? And they'll say, I registered a Twitter account.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, is it possible somebody's already doing great work you could go learn from?
Yeah.
Or from a business side, they'll go, I want to open a coffee shop. And I'll say, have you ever worked at a coffee shop? And they'll go, no. I'm just going to mortgage my house and my family. And I'm just going to go for it.
Yeah,
and then you add, like, you add an element of faith sometimes, and people misquote, "Go to the land, I'll show you Abraham," they act like doing that, not having a plan, is holy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, I want to slightly move deeper into this whole idea of the next generation. John, you know that at Growing Leaders, we really focus on that student. Our end user is a student. And most of the people listening right now are probably people that have kids or know students or work with students. So here's my question for you. What advice would you give to today's student while they're still in school about this career thing? What skills would you recommend that they develop along the way?
Okay, here's a really practical one. You should make a list of 10 people that are in an industry you're interested in, and you should send each of those 10 people a really simple email, and it should ask them one question. It should say, "Hi, I'm a student. I'm really excited about learning more. I'm passionate about what you do. Is there a book you'd recommend I read?" Mm. And writing them a single question versus the long 10,000-word email that says, "I know you're busy, but..." will actually get a response. And then when they tell you the book, read the book. And a week later, respond with, "Here's the two things I learned in that book. Thank you so much." And if you start that as a freshman in college or a sophomore in college, if you start relationships before you need relationships, you see, what you don't want to do is start at 25 when you need a connection or you need an internship. If you start as a student, and they'll respond to you in a different way than a 35-year-old. A 35-year-old emailing you is a weirdo. An 18-year-old or 19-year-old going, "Hey, I really just like to learn. I'm in college." They'll respond to you. And that's a great, simple way for you to, at the end of college, you've got 40 very smart people you've interacted with. Yeah. And you've started the seeds of relationship. As far as a practical side, that's what I'd say. The second thing I'd say is, it's an awesome time to be a millennial. It's an awesome time to be a growing leader, because the reputation is that you're entitled and lazy, and you can crush that reputation. The bar right now for you is so, so, so stupid low. And you get to come in and hustle and show up an entire stereotype and blow that out of the water. Five CEOs I've talked to in the last few months all told me stories about millennials being lazy at their jobs, specific things they did. You get to go into that atmosphere and prove them all wrong with your hard work. And that's a great situation.
Well, I agree. In fact, that's the kind of advice we give to students when the subject comes up. We say, be countercultural. Yeah, that's what they're saying, entitled, lazy slackers. But how cool to be different, swim a totally different direction. You get noticed much easier.
It's a great situation. Yeah. And I don't buy into anybody who says one generation is all like this. I think we overblow those reports. And I know a lot of hardworking, hustling millennials that challenge me and teach me. So I'd say if you're a student, you need to find somebody who's 10 years ahead of you. Somebody in your current circle, somebody smarter than you that's 10 years ahead, and ask them a couple questions. Because they'll tell you, "Here's 10 things I thought were important when I was your age, and I was wrong. Only these two are."
Yeah.
And then what I'd say, if you're listening to this and you're in your late 20s or 30s or 40s, you need to be in relationship with one of these growing leaders who's 10 years, 15 years behind you, because they see things you don't see.
Absolutely.
So it's a two-way relationship.
Yeah, you're right. We've talked before on this podcast about reverse mentoring. That great thing that Jack Welch first talked about years ago at GE, you know, you get this 40-something or 50-something meeting with this new grad, and they can be mutually mentoring each other by sharing from their world. It's so cool. It really
100%.
Is. 100%. So talk to me about this. What advice would you give to a young professional realizing that he or she doesn't really like the dream job that they got? It's not working out. You understand that. What do you say?
Well, I'd say a couple things. One is be very careful about the phrase dream job, because sometimes we interpret it to mean perfect job.
Yeah.
And I saw another author the other day say online, if you don't love 90% of what it takes to be in your industry, you're in the wrong industry. And I think that's terrible advice. Yeah. I think we've created this conversation that 90%, Tim, let's do the math. That means in a 40-hour work week, there's only 4 hours that aren't magical every week. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, you live in Atlanta. Most people there have longer than a 4-hour work commute. That's terrible advice.
That's right.
So what I'd say right off the gate, if you and I sat down and you said, "I don't love my dream job," I'd go, pump the brakes for a second.
Yeah.
Tell me why you don't love it. And if you told me, "Well, it's not matching my calling because I have to do expense reports," I'd say, who said expense reports will ever feel like your calling?
Yeah.
I think we've created this toxic environment where we expect or demand, on the worst levels of it, dream jobs. And then when stuff is difficult or uncomfortable, which work is going to be, we think we've failed and we're in the wrong job. Yeah. So the first thing I'd say is be very careful about that. The second thing I always say is, what is your team saying? What is your team saying? You know, what are the people, the core group of people that know you and love you and can give you real, real advice, real encouragement? What are they saying right now? Are they saying, hey, you know what? You've fought the good fight. You've been there for 3 years. You've tried the best. It's time to move on. Or is your team going, whoa, wait a second. You're 3 months into a job. You barely even know how to work that job yet. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? You're tired of it. It's 11 weeks in.
Yeah.
So what are the people that are in your life that can speak truth saying, and if you don't have those people, be very careful.
Absolutely.
Growing leader, old leader, whatever. What I've learned is leaders who can't be questioned end up doing questionable things.
Yeah.
That's how it goes 100% of the time.
That's good. This is a little bit random. Well, it's not random. This is a little bit off the cuff, Mr. Acuff. But talk about the value of both hard skills and soft skills, because you do talk about the idea of just basic people skills in your book. And that's something that I don't know if K-12 education really hits, or for that matter, higher ed. In all due respect, I don't know that we learn it really well in a classroom, typically, unless we have a rare teacher. So would you talk about that?
Yeah, I think you know, a great example of a hard skill is when a new technology forces you to learn a new language.
I think
about, you know, the graphic designer I met who said, I recognized if I didn't learn how to design for the internet, I was going to become a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And so he had to learn a new language. And so I think it's important for you to always be acknowledging, okay, the language that this industry requires me to know is changing.
Yeah.
And how do I change along with it? So, but on the soft skill side, I think my favorite soft skill is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it serves us in any position we have. And I define empathy as understanding what someone needs and acting on it.
Yeah.
When you work at a company, you have to have empathy for your boss. You have to have empathy for your clients, your customers, your boss's boss. I teach a really simple idea about a great question to ask your boss is, hey, how can I make you look great in front of your boss?
Yeah.
How can I add value? And that question, nobody asks it.
And yeah.
One of those where people go, wait a second, what do you mean add value?
Yeah.
You want me to look good? Like, no. We're supposed to all be selfish trying to build our own empires.
Yeah.
And so having empathy for a boss and knowing, while they don't want to limit my vacation time, but somebody above them made them do that, how can I have empathy? How can I, you know, they don't like long reports, so I'm going to give them the highlights and speak their language. So I think empathy is a really important soft skill.
Huge, huge. When a student graduates and they're finished now with school, at least for now, what would be initial counsel that you would have them focus on? If they came to you and said, Mr. Acuff, what should I do? What would you say focus on first?
Well, I think the first thing I'd talk about is relationships. I teach a really simple 5-question note card activity and do-over that lays out how to have relationships. And what I found is that we don't know who we know.
Yeah.
If I sat down with the average listener right now and said, hey, who do you know that's important to your job? They could maybe rattle off 4 or 5 people. But with the activity, you end up getting 50 and 60 people and start to go, wow, I have a network and I need to build it. We don't like that phrase networking. And I get that. It sounds promotional and cheesy,
but
I'd start with the relationship, because ultimately you're always going to work with people and you're always going to get jobs based on relationships. That's what the book's about, is the idea of no matter what you're going to do this year, next year, 10 years from now, and I don't know what it is, but neither do you. I know you're never going to have a job where you don't need a career savings account, where you show up and they go, we wish you had less skills, or we wish you had less relationships.
Yeah.
But the first thing I'd say is right out of college, I'd work on building my relationships and being deliberate about that.
Yeah, that's good. Rich. Now, I think I understood you. The career savings account involves those 4 items that you've mentioned: relationship, skills, character, times, hustle. Would you real quick maybe mention a specific activity for the other 3?
Sure. I define hustle as an act of focus, not frenzy. It's got a bad reputation on the internet right now. We think it means become a workaholic.
Yeah.
That's not what it means at all. A specific activity about hustle might be you get honest about how you spend your time. I teach this thing called the 30 days of hustle. And that's one of the things we talk about, because a lot of us, you know, right now the average teenager engages in 9 hours of media consumption a day.
Yeah.
You know, the average 21-year-old has played 10,000 hours of video games. And so a really easy way to hustle is to say, okay, in an average week, where's my time going?
Yeah.
You know, get some information. A really specific thing about skills is a specific one would be, how do I add value to the place that I've been hired? Lawyers have that easy. Lawyers have billable hours.
Yeah.
Most
yeah.
jobs though are squished. They're squishy. You mm-hmm. don't know, they don't have a very specific way to measure your value.
Yeah.
So a great way to think about that is, how do I add specific value in a skill way to this company?
Good.
And character, a big part of character to me is generosity. Mm. How do you build generosity amongst the people you serve? You know, how do you give of your time and of your talent? Because that's the relational side of it.
Yeah.
People yeah. like helping friends win. They don't like helping strangers win.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
part of this is, how do you build generous, open, not manipulative. This is about being deliberate. I love when people tell me, oh, you can't be deliberate at character because it's manipulative. And I always think, well, then forget your wife's birthday and tell her you didn't want to be manipulative and deliberate because it felt fake. No, we can be very
right.
deliberate in the context yeah. of relationship and character.
Yeah.
So those would be a couple examples.
Those are great. Those are very practical. I appreciate it. John, you mentioned earlier the reputation that millennials have, and even the second half of that millennial generation that we call IY because of the I world. We consistently hear stories like you do. One recent conversation I had with a Bank of America executive, when she finished doing the orientation with her brand new employees, all 22 years old, one of them raised their hand and said, "When's our spring break here at Bank of America?" And she had to smile and say, "Sweetheart, we don't have a spring break here." But you know what that
That's
was an
great.
Example of? I'm sure the girl was smart that said that, that young lady. Somehow, adults had not prepared her for the shift.
When a boomer CEO tells me that millennials are entitled, I always say, we should talk to their parents.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is you.
That's
like,
right.
We have to take some ownership, like
Absolutely.
On both sides.
Yeah.
But I think I cut you off from your question.
Well, no, I just was going to get to this. You mentioned the whole notion in your book that we're taught to work jobs, not build careers. I'd love, as we kind of wrap this thing up, for you just to elaborate on this idea in the context of preparing students for the working world that perhaps they're not being prepared for typically in K-12 education.
Yeah, I think the big, you know, the first bit of encouragement I'd give you is that we need you. You're very needed. So we are excited about you coming into the workforce. And you know, I think people are also nervous because they think, well, what do they know that we don't know?
Yeah,
you know, what are the languages they're speaking? So I'd first of all say, we really need you. And then I'd say things that are very, you know, very practical. I wrote an article once about the things nobody tells you when you graduate. Mm-hmm. So one of them would be, hey, one of your friends or a couple of your friends are going to be really successful instantly, and you shouldn't mm-hmm. compare. Mm-hmm. Like, somebody's going to get that job in New York and you're going to feel yeah. like a failure because they yeah. always post things. I'd say too, you know what, the 20s are a lot lonelier than you think they'll be.
Yeah.
We tend to glamorize them and you feel like you're the only 23-year-old that's having a lonely time
yeah.
at the 20s.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's not true for a second. I'd say, you know, pay attention in meetings. You want a practical tip? Pay attention yeah. in meetings. Like 90% of work is how you focus in meetings. And I'll meet millennials or boomers or millennials or Gen X that'll say, my boss doesn't give me any opportunities. And I'll always respond with, well, I know where she hands them out in meetings. And when you're on your iPhone, instead of being present in the meeting, you're telling everyone in the room they're not important.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah.
little things like that matter. I'd also say take risks. You know, this is a great time in your life to take some risks. The advice I give a 23-year-old with no mortgage, a small college loan and no kids is different than the advice I give a 39-year-old dad with a mortgage and four kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd say take risks. Hold your money with an open hand. Money is something that pretends to be in everything. It's a great thing and you can do great things with it, but it's not everything. You know, if you do move home, bring an exit strategy. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you have a plan to get out
yeah,
of there. Because
yeah.
what happens is, your mom starts doing your laundry. She starts buying your food. You start, you know, just because you're sleeping in your bedroom from middle school doesn't mean you have to act like a middle schooler. Like
that's good.
Your ability to be an adult while you live there is valuable.
Absolutely.
I guess the last thing I'd say, which isn't about career, is don't spend all your time with idiots and then wonder why it's hard to meet someone great to date. Like that, like an amazing person isn't going to find you delivering the pizza.
Yeah.
Like if you want to be a quality person, hang out with quality people.
Yeah. Good. That's rich. I'm serious.
Last one.
Okay.
Second last one. Don't ask to work from home the first week of your new job. It's a privilege, not a right.
Good. That's good. You earn that, don't you? Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. It's over time. It's, you know, you've got no equity. When you start a new job, you have to build equity. And so, I think the millennials are awesome. I learned so much from them. I know we joke about the stories of them being entitled, and I'm sure there are some, but man, they're going to do amazing things.
Yeah.
And I hope they continue to listen to this podcast. I think they'll love Do Over because it's funny. And, you know, most of these books of this variety are boring. And it kills me that we write books telling you, boring books telling you to have an exciting career. That makes no sense.
It doesn't. No, it doesn't. That's right. John, this has been great. I'm not surprised that it's been great, but thank you so much for taking time. And you that are listening, I hope that you've heard, John, if you are an adult, a boss, an employer, a coach, a teacher, a parent, we're saying invest in this emerging generation, get them ready. And I think this book, Do Over, might just be a tool for you to help get them ready. John, we're learning it at Growing Leaders. Our books that we put in print now have to be gamified. We've got a digital platform now, and we're having to relearn how we deliver content just because the world is dynamic. And these millennials will be leading the way, I believe, and we've just got to get them ready. So, John, again, thank you for sharing with us. Great to have you on the program, and we'll have to do it again sometime.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
You bet.
Thank you again for joining us on the Growing Leaders podcast. We hope that you got a lot out of that. I know that was some incredible insight, so I hope that that you walk away feeling like you got a lot from that conversation. We want to encourage you to check out John Acuff's book, Do Over. You can buy that today on his website, acuff.me. That's acuff.me. Go there and check out some of the things he's been working on, as well as purchasing his book. And we also want to invite you, if you're interested in continuing to be a part of what Growing Leaders is trying to do in the world, we want to invite you to our event, our big event coming up this June, the National Leadership Forum. We know that there's going to be conversations there. They're going to continue to talk along these same kind of veins of the conversations that we have here on this podcast. So we'd love for you to join us. You can get more information about that on our website, growingleaders.com. You can also find books written by Tim and other various resources that we have. Thanks for joining us again. And thank you, Tim. Thank you, John, for the conversation. We'll see you next time.